Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello and blessings to all. Welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. Our guest tonight is Cal Cooper, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. So, Bob, any news today?
You tell me. Any news today?
I did pull something out that I read in USA Today, but I think it was USA Yesterday, maybe. There is a gentleman named David Wollnerman. He's 88 years old. He and his wife live in Des Moines, Iowa. And they are the last known survivors of the Nazi concentration camp that's left in the state of Iowa, or in Des Moines, but I think in the state of Iowa. And they interviewed him. And during his interview, he tells the story about he was only 12 or 13 years old when the Nazis came and made them line up, and people who know the history of this thing, they would have two lines when the Nazis came. They would put the very young and the very old in one line, and those people were eliminated from life, and everybody else was put in another line and sent to work. And while he was on this line, if he were to have said, I'm 13 years old, he would have gotten killed with everybody else. But he said this. He doesn't know why, but out of his mouth, when they asked him how old he was, just out of his mouth came 18. He didn't know what was going on, and he claims this was a divine intervention that allowed him to go to the work camps instead and to be able to eventually get liberated back in 1945 and relocated to the United States in Des Moines. But I think that that's interesting because Viktor Frankl and a lot of those people who have written about the spiritual aspects of those people who were in the Holocaust particularly, or people who have been faced with very traumatic situations, all claim to have some sort of a divine intervention that gives them the hope to go on.
And you may call it a divine intervention. It could be a form of intuition. Just some sort of inner knowledge or tapping into some, you know, information source, you know, or it could be a discarnate entity telepathically saying, tell them you're 18, you know.
Right.
And you don't know whether that thought emanates from your own conscious awareness or whether it was put there by
right. somebody. I would venture to guess we have loads and loads of listeners who have had those kinds of experiences where they have, on a different level, not a conscious level, have changed their route or heard a voice or said something that they didn't really believe came out of their mouths, only to result in changing something in their journey or in their life later on down the road. And if you're listening and you have a story like that, we'd love to hear it. So you can send it by email to radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org, and we'd love to share it with our members.
Yeah, so many people, you know, myself included, you make all these decisions during the course of your day. And you never stop to contemplate, you know, whether the thoughts were your own or not, you know. If you're not, many people are completely shut down to the possibility, you know.
Right, of course.
They think that every thought has to be coming from your own consciousness, your own brain that's generating these things. But once that crack opens and you realize that there are these other, you know, realms and these other fields of information, then you give pause sometimes.
Right.
And why did I make that decision? It doesn't make any logical sense.
Well, here, in this situation, he's looking back at it. He didn't know that that's how they were dividing them up. They just asked him, and, you know, he said 18.
Yeah. Incidentally, for those who are not aware, you know, we have embarked upon a series of webinars.
Oh, yes.
You know, we're excited about that. We're going to be able to get a lot of great people at work in these fields that we're interested in. We're going to have access via the Internet. So you just sit at home. You don't have to travel to an event or to a conference and sit in the privacy of your home. We had our first one a couple weeks ago.
April 15th.
Yeah, with
Janet Nohavik.
It was Mediumship 101, which was a basic course about mediumship and how to enhance your abilities. We look forward to a well-respected scientist, Dr. Stephen Browdy, who on May 19th will be giving a webinar about taking physical mediumship seriously. And that will be very interesting because he's researched extensively both from the literature and in field investigations, you know, of physical mediums. So he'll be giving us the lowdown on that. We have many more scheduled throughout the year and more to come. I know we have Dr. Jim Tucker from the
October.
In October, who will be giving a webinar presentation about past life memories in children. On tap, we're ironing out details with Dr. Claude Swanson and many others. So you can always check the events page on foreverfamilyfoundation.org. And we do send emails well in advance of these things to all of our members.
All of our members. So if you're listening and you're not a member, you want to go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and become a member. It's free. If you're not sure if you're a member, the big hint would be that you would get our Signs of Life magazine in the snail mail, and that's how you know that you are a member. And the last issue had gone out about a month ago, so that would help you to make a decision on whether or not you are a member. But we love members, and that's why it's free, because we want everybody to have access to this information.
So we are going to go to a break. As Fran mentioned, we do have a wonderful guest tonight, Cal Cooper, who has written extensively about things such as telephone calls from the dead, and he's a researcher in England. He'll be joining us from across the pond. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a few minutes with Cal Cooper.
Does consciousness survive death? Can technology be used to interact with the deceased? Can hearing from the dead heal the living? At the Windbridge Institute, we are working to answer these and similar questions. Through our studies with certified research mediums, we are examining psychic abilities and communication with the other side, offering insights into the limitless nature of consciousness and unlocking the possibilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. Be a part of it. Become a Windbridge member today. Please visit www.windbridge.org to learn more.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Tuning in, our guest tonight is Cal Cooper. Our sponsor is the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. Bob?
And Cal Cooper received much media interest for his research into phone calls from the dead after he received the Eileen J. Garrett Scholarship from the Parapsychology Foundation in 2009. Cal holds the bachelor's degree in psychology from the University of Northampton, a master's in psychology from Sheffield Hallam University. He's the recipient of the Alex Tanis Scholarship Award from the Alex Tanis Foundation for scientific research several times over. Cal currently is based at the University of Northampton pursuing doctoral research in psychology and parapsychology. He's also a lecturer at the university on subjects such as parapsychology, thanatology, and ancient mysticism. He's most recognized for his research into survival of death, psychic abilities, poltergeist apparitions, and hauntings. He's the author of several books. One we've talked about before, Phone Calls from the Dead. He's a co-author of Conversations with Ghosts, and we're greatly anticipating the release in a few weeks of his new book, also co-written, and the name of the book is Paracoustics, Sounds and the Paranormal. The website is calcooper.com. Welcome, Cal. Thanks for joining us from across the pond at this late hour for you. We appreciate it.
Hi, Bob and Fran. No, my pleasure. It's an absolute pleasure to speak to you guys again. I hardly notice the time difference.
Yeah, well, I know you're so busy that you probably get 3 hours sleep a night.
I just keep going until I crash and burn. My brain just tells me when it's ready to sleep. I don't conform to this day and night stuff.
A true rebel.
Exactly.
I mentioned paracoustics. So the title of the new book that's coming out. So is that a combination of acoustics and the paranormal?
Yeah, it's something that I was brought on board with. Really, it's as you'll see, the main editor of the book is Steve Parsons, and he for a number of years has been working on a PhD looking at infrasound. So you're absolutely right that the title, which Steve came up with, is paranormal and acoustics combined, where the entire book is edited looking at the physics of sound from Steve's perspective, because he has a background in electronics, and his PhD has looked at psychology and the relationship between human experiences and infrasound. So usually haunted locations or people's experiences of the paranormal in relation to infrasound and what it does to the brain and the body. So we've expanded on this. He's looked at the physics of sound. We have chapters on anything you can imagine that involves sound perception and noise and psychology and parapsychology. So within that, you could have shamanistic music, EVP, people hearing music at the point of death, the telephone calls from the dead. That's where I was sort of brought in and asked to expand and write about the psychology of sound. We've gone into the real history of EVP as well, because when you look at all the popular books on EVP, you'll find a lot of historical inaccuracies as well, where people haven't really delved into parapsychology and its publications and where the formal studies really started and where the historical psychical research literature shows that there were some early accidental examples of EVP going back to the early 1900s as well. So it's a really, really quite a big book and a big anthology. And a good handbook for any investigator of the paranormal who's interested in EVP or sound perception and how sounds play a role in the paranormal, because the book is designed so that you can actually understand the background, what's happened, what research has taken place to date, and then allows people the opportunity to take this further, because the appendices even show some of these research paper examples or some techniques for actually measuring different things yourself.
Yeah, you know, and as I was reading, you know, through the book, it sort of hits home just how integrated, you know, sound is with the paranormal. Of course, not all sounds have paranormal implications, but when we talk about, you know, EVP or even ghosts and these, or going back to the Victorian age of the rappings and the knockings and near-death experiencers who talk about hearing their various sounds or music, it's fascinating. I'm sure that takes up a lot of your research.
Yeah, when you think about it, sound perception and visual perception are massive, massive areas. And it's really hard to escape parapsychological phenomena without those two elements of perception being involved in someone reporting something paranormal. With lecturing parapsychology, and indeed any class that I teach at the University of Northampton, we may have a variety of students that come in with all kinds of disabilities from time to time. I remember one of the hardest things I did was for blind students, and it happened in a few instances, who took on the module. So teaching things like instances of hauntings and apparitions and anything that was to do with visual perception, seeing an image or a reflection in something, trying to relay that to an investigator or someone who's taking this on, who's studying it and is completely blind, has been blind from birth, you know, it's a very difficult topic to try and relay when you have no visual perception. And the same goes for someone who doesn't have sound perception as well. Recently, one of my students was very hard of hearing, and so we had to rework some of the kind of designs they were involved in, so it required very little auditory perception. So they were working quite a lot with Zener cards and doing ESP testing, because it was so visually focused and looking at other people's body language as well involved. And so you'll discover that when you look at the start of paracoustics, when you look at the physics of sound and also the psychology of sound, you realize in day-to-day life, in everything that we do, there's no escaping it, and you can't just shut off sound. As soon as we hear something, our brain instantaneously taps into a memory, a familiarity with that sound, and tries to instantly recognize, well, what does that sound mean? Is it pleasant, or don't we find it pleasant? Is it a noise, or is it a sound? Is it music, or is it a harmonic, what is it to us? What does it actually mean? And it'll mean different things to different people. And that's why we all have different tastes in music as well, because sound perception is also very individual. It kind of teases us and tickles us in different ways.
That's
so
right.
To speak.
We all have different tastes in music, right? Well,
yeah.
And then, of course, from a paranormal perspective, when we talk about sound, sometimes we don't know whether there's an audible sound or it's a telepathic process, right? I mean, you know, so it's hard. Sometimes it's hard to distinguish. The recipient doesn't even know. You know, it is not sure. Did I hear that or did I hear it internally?
Well, that takes things into a kind of a massive debate, really. When you look at the early theories for apparitions, going back to the founding of the Society for Psychical Research, Frederick Myers was discussing apparitions quite a lot, and so was Frank Podmore, and their main theories were that apparitions are generally a telepathic projection of the mind, and so they're a hallucination from that sense. But they might, the image that we see might relay information that we shouldn't otherwise know about. So at least they're still suggesting some sort of side process going on. It doesn't necessarily mean that the apparition we see is somehow the surviving consciousness of the dead. And if more than one person sees it, then they also believe that maybe this is us passing on a telepathic hallucination. Same goes when we actually hear something that we think we hear in a haunted location, that bang, that rap, that tap. It could be natural sounds of the building in some instances, but also if we're alone as well, how do we know that that sound was objective and actually within the environment and came to us and we heard it? Or we're just expecting these sounds and we're just somehow hallucinating the sound we think we're about to hear. So again, some researchers like Raymond Bayliss, they went into haunted locations with tape recorders and had them constantly running so they could distinguish between the sounds that they heard and weren't sure whether it was in their mind, and ones that they thought, well, that's definitely there. So on playback, they could actually check what sounds seemed to be definitely objective things that were recordable as well. So therefore, it wasn't an aspect of the mind. It was definitely a sound that originated from the building that they were in.
Hmm. What always fascinated me, especially after reading your writings about telephone calls from the dead, you know, from the limited knowledge I had about EVP, I mean, the voices were never heard live, so to speak. They were only heard, after playback on the recording device. Whereas with these telephone calls from the dead, the person heard a voice, you know, as it was being communicated. At least that's what we think. So is there something about the recording device itself that changes the mix?
I mean, well, it varied.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, Bob. Go on.
No, I was just wondering, you know, why trying to just logically figure that out, you know, that, I mean, the person that's, well, in the case of EVP, the person that's doing the recording, in effect, is acting as the conduit or the medium. So the person that's receiving the phone call is also, I guess, acting similarly as the conduit or the medium, the way I would see it, right? So then, you know, what difference does it make if it's a recording device or not? It's a hard concept.
I'd agree to an extent. I mean, this is one of the myths that we've dispelled the myth. There we go. We've dispelled the myth. If you look into the history of EVP, and it was a massive chapter for the book, and we tried to cut it down as much as we could, but it's about 10,000 words, so it's like the size of a bachelor's dissertation, just trying to outline a general history of EVP. And when you look at the first formal studies of EVP, so beyond all the accidental discoveries of EVP that took place with numerous people like Heward Carrington and other notorious psychical researchers. In the early 1950s, Raymond Bayliss was working with an astral projector by the name of Attila Vonzelay in California. And they produced a few reports, but then finally decided to publish their first report on recording anomalous sounds, bangs, raps, taps, and the odd voices in the Journal of the American Society of Psychical Research in the January 1959 edition. And it was just a correspondence. It wasn't actually written up as a full research paper. So it was at the back where you can write a letter to the editor, someone can note it and then reply. and it was a very kind of slow process of forming academic debate via a journal. But even so, in some of these experiments that they carried out, and Raymond did these for a good 30 years or so, what they had was a studio that they rented out, a sound studio, and they also created a cabinet that several people could actually stand inside, a wooden cabinet, and the recorder would be inside there. Attila von Zelay, as a medium, believed that he could get these anomalous sounds and voices to suddenly transmit it out of thin air. But he would do that after going into some form of meditative state. So Raymond would be sat outside the cabinet. Attila von Zelay would go in and he'd start to meditate. And as soon as he'd started to encourage the voices and the bangs and the raps to come out, he'd step outside of the cabinet in the hope that they were still being recorded. So to some extent, they could actually objectively hear these EVPs, which were then later recorded, and they could verify on playback that they were definitely there once he managed to start the ball rolling. And now in modern day, when we look at all the TV shows where you've got all kinds of investigators wandering about with EVP equipment, it's never really the case in those shows that they actually hear it and record it. It's always playback. And that's not always been the case with the formal EVP studies. Sometimes people have heard something and wanted to record it. With the telephone calls, they vary quite a bit because you've got a completely different shift in the intention of the phenomena. So with EVP, there's the intention to record something. With the telephone calls, they happen to people that don't necessarily believe in the paranormal, have an interest in it. They might have different religious beliefs. They might have come from a different social event that's just happened in their life. They might have gone through a big event such as a loss or a bereavement, or maybe nothing's happening in their life. And all of a sudden the phone rings, they have a conversation, and afterwards they might think back to that conversation and realize what's happened. They might realize after the call that that person had been dead for a good 24 hours or maybe even a week, or maybe they knew at the time of the call. And it's very hazy, and very rarely in these cases can you get a recording of it, because people don't regularly record their telephone conversations. Right. So that they are quite varied, but you are right that there has to be someone there to experience it. So someone is acting as a medium. Maybe the person making the EVP recording is somehow responsible for producing some sort of psychic effect. And at the same time, the person answering the telephone might also be that person responsible for creating a psychic effect. And in those instances, we'd say that comes first. We'd have to try and rule those out somehow to dig deeper and say maybe discarnate entities are responsible. But that seems to be at the bottom. First, we have to consider the conventional explanations. If we can rule some of those out, we can start to consider psychic phenomena. We know that every time you have an instance of a case that suggests survival of death, you can apply some sort of other psychic theory to dispel this idea of survival of death as well.
I'd like to get your opinion. I mean, since a great interest of yours is in the the physics of sound, I was reading a blog the other day, and the person was talking about the Schumann frequency, which is supposedly this humming of the Earth, the natural Earth's frequency, which they said was 7.8 hertz. And the point that the author was making is that now, when it's being measured, they're finding that it's almost double of what it was, and the implication was that this would have an effect on the paranormal, on communication, receiving and sending it. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
I've really no idea when it comes to the physics of sound. That's completely Steve's sort of bag. I can only sort of briefly tell you what happens with infrasound, and we know it's a consistent effect every time you put someone in an area of infrasound. Steve's taken infrasound generators just to go to places that already have high or unusual levels of infrasound, and is able to increase the levels of infrasound and increase the experiences. So infrasound is sound frequencies that are below 20-19 hertz, round about there. Usually they're below there and they fluctuate back and forth. And it's this fluctuation of sound waves below 19-20 hertz or so that is below what we can hear, but it certainly has an effect on the body. It's like putting someone in an area where you're experiencing the ripples in a bath going back and forth. So they're going to hit you constantly. And we recognize this through our body, and then the body tells the brain, and the brain starts to perceive things in different ways. When you're in an area with unusual levels of infrasound, it can cause a sense of presence, the hair to stand up on the back of your neck, maybe a cool sensation or draft. You might feel that people are watching you with this sense of presence. And in some cases, because you're in an area where there's this constant fluctuation of frequencies that is actually moving the entire environment, things around you, a cup on a table, a puddle on the floor, it's vibrating at a very subtle level. So it also creates the eyeballs within the socket to vibrate, which creates a spontaneous smearing of vision, which some people might perceive as a grey or white mist and think they've seen an apparition in that environment. For some environments, though, that have been known to have unusual high levels of infrasound, one of the best known ones is London Underground. I mean, that's massive. You've got all the vibrations from the traffic above going down into the ground and all the trains going through the tunnels. Loads of ghost sightings have occurred down there. Somewhere people claim to have interacted with these ghosts and described people that have died down there with great accuracy. What seems to be going on is that the infrasound levels down there only heighten what's already there as well. So you can put someone in an already known haunted location, crank up the infrasound, and increase the amount of things that people report and experience that often seem to coincide with other people's experiences.
So it doesn't necessarily mean, like when we talk about infrasound or, you know, geomagnetic forces, you know, that that's causing or creating the experience, which it could, but it's also equally likely that it's just enhancing the ability of the communicator and the receiver, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, on that basic level, it's not really going to tell us much if all the person's experiencing is a sense of presence. That's not validating anything.
No.
Unless we could say that if you put them in a haunted location, and we know that in that haunted location there is only one room, just one room where other people have experienced things. If they still go into that location and you've cranked up the infrasound or there's infrasound present, and yet that person still only feels the hair on the back of the neck, that sense of presence in that one room, we know something environmentally unusual is going on still that falls within the remits of parapsychology, but it's linking acoustics and the paranormal. We've got to understand sound perception and the physics of sound and combine it with our knowledge of parapsychology to understand how the two are interacting. We can't escape from the environment and this sort of physical aspect of sound in those cases.
Mm. And you've actually, your research is not limited to the world of academia or a laboratory. I mean, you've actually gone out in the field and participated in some of these things. I think you have a photo in the book that's about to be released of was that you when doing some Gansfield work or
yes. I thought you were about to say a haunting investigation. I thought, I don't remember putting a picture in there of me doing ghost investigation. It's been a long while, so I would have had to have dug out the photographs to find one of me at a haunted location.
Right.
That's me doing Gansfeld research. That was just a set-up example for the book of what the Gansfeld is like, but certainly at the University of Northampton, we have two perception labs. Where we have big reclining leather chairs where we can put people into sensory isolation. So by basically closing down and making people relax their ability to hear their environment, see their environment, or even feel their environment, because they have to go through this relaxation procedure tape where it tells them to get as comfortable as they can, loosen their arms and legs, and they stretch and hold and let go. And they do this over a period of 50 minutes. It makes you so sort of completely relaxed and on the verge of wanting to go to sleep, but you manage to stay awake. So it's as though you're entering that hypnagogic state of going to sleep, but you're staying there. And because you're in this altered state of consciousness, then we can conduct a variety of studies where we can look at anything from remote viewing to telepathy, for example.
Yeah. Well, we are talking with Cal Cooper. The website is calcooper.com. If you log on, you're going to learn a lot more of what Cal's up to, as well as information on the books, Phone Calls from the Dead, Conversation with Ghosts, and you'll be able to follow the release of the new book, Paracoustics. We're going to go to a break. Stay with us, and we'll be back with Cal in a few.
Does consciousness survive death? Can technology be used to interact with the deceased? Can hearing from the dead heal the living? At the Windbridge Institute, we are working to answer these and similar questions. Through our studies with certified research mediums, we are examining psychic abilities and communication with the other side, offering insights into the limitless nature of consciousness and unlocking the possibilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. Be a part of it. Become a Windbridge member today. Please visit www.windbridge.org to learn more. Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is atransc.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com. I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Just tuning in, our guest tonight is Cal Cooper. Our sponsor is the Windbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential, and they can be found on the web at www.windbridge.com. That's windbridge.org. Have I been saying .com?
I think you said .org. Right.
Okay, our Holiday of the Earth raffle 2015. The winners were posted last week on their website, on our website, first names. We thank everyone who supported the work of Forever Family Foundation by buying chances to win those five medium readings, and we hope you'll continue to support us as our Holidays Past raffle will be launched shortly. The annual Afterlife Exploration Retreat in Chester, Connecticut will be this July 24th through 26th. Early bird pricing ends on May 31st, so hurry and gather up your best friends forever. and have a blast in a quad, triple, or double room. Or if you like your privacy, reserve a single. All rooms have air conditioning and a full private bathroom. And we have a packed schedule of happenings, including spoon bending and spirit communication. There are a few seats left to our May webinar, Taking Physical Mediumship Seriously, with Dr. Stephen Browdy. He's a fabulous presenter, and this will be an extremely interesting topic. If you're a medium or studying to be one, this is a topic you really need to learn about. Visit foreverfamilyfoundation.org for all event links, information, and registration. And please, 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 when you are there, click on the donate button and send in the most generous contribution you can. This radio show, the newsletter, the website, and all the other wonderful things Forever Family Foundation depends on your support of our listeners and members, as the work we do does not get us grants and support that other not-for-profits operate on. So just remember that when you're on our website, or you get an email with a donate button. And speaking of donations, you can support us without sending us money. If you shop on Amazon.com, you can use any of the Amazon links on our website that will take you to the Amazon site. It's the only step you need to take before you start your shopping, and this will result in a donation from Amazon to us based on a dollar percentage of everything that goes into your shopping cart. And if you don't shop on Amazon, there's another way to be certain that almost all your website shopping produces a donation to Forever Family Foundation, again, without you having to send us anything. Visit iGive.com. Sign up and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. It's free, and just like with Amazon, a portion of your spending results in a donation to Forever Family Foundation. Once you set it up, each time you shop on the internet, iGive.com will automatically send us a donation when you shop in one of their more than 1,500 online stores that you're probably already shopping in, like Bloomingdale's, Fandango, Hanes, Urban Outfitters, or Zales. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. And finally, if you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Okay, Bob, back to you.
And we're back with Cal Cooper, and we're talking about his upcoming book, to soon to be released, Paracoustics, Sound and the Paranormal. By the way, Cal's Twitter handle is your name, Callum E. Cooper, correct?
Yep. On there, you'll get all the latest updates, and I think it's fairly easy to contact me on there, especially if you just send me a tweet, I'll usually get it. But that's literally got all the latest news, especially when it comes to book releases and events coming up as well, because it's checked up on daily as well.
Okay.
And let's spell Callum E.
Yeah, it's C-A-L-L-U-M-E Cooper, C-O-O-P-E-R. Okay, so
That's the one.
Cal, the more I read, and I've been reading a lot lately about, the history of mediumship and the seances and the Fox sisters, and I know you go into it a bit in the upcoming book, and I'm fascinated because I never realized the extent of the explosion of mediums in the mid to late 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, especially, I know all over the world, but in the United States, there were relatively small cities that were populated by 10,000, 20,000 mediums at once. So,
oh, God, yeah.
When you look around today, and there's certainly a lot of interest, I mean, do you think there's more or less interest in mediumship than in that Victorian age?
I really wouldn't like to hazard a guess as to which had the most, you know. I mean, if you go back to the Victorian age, this is the height of entertainment. In many ways, but also a massive side of grief resolution for people. It was following the Napoleonic War. Loads and loads of lives were lost, and families never heard of what happened to their relatives that went off to war. And this whole idea of mediumship and being able to go to one of these people and contact the dead was a big relief for people, but it was also a massive interest as well, this idea in communication with another side of life. So we have a massive amount of spiritualist books that came out during the mid to late 1800s. And because of this uprise, it led to the formation of the British Society of Psychical Research in 1882, and then the American branch in 1884 by eminent physicists and philosophers and psychologists. But you can compare it to today. And we've got all kinds of sources of entertainment. So we have TV, theme parks, computers, you name it. There's loads of things to keep a person interested in day-to-day life, way beyond just literature, books and poetry that they may have had back then in the theatre. But mediumship still has a prominent role in there. There's a lot of people that go to stage shows and demonstrations to see mediums. And there's a lot of people that, whether they like it or not, at the point of bereavement, they may have an anomalous experience and sense the presence of the dead, which might encourage those people to then go and see a medium and ask them more and find out what it's all about. So I think the interest is still there, but it's just hard nowadays to document it. Go back to the Victorian era and people were a lot more strict with themselves and routine when it came to keeping diaries and documenting things and writing letters. And that made physical correspondence and documents that we can look back on. Today, everything gets lost in email or people don't report things. They certainly don't report the amount of things to the SPR that they used to do. People having paranormal experiences used to send all these things to the SPR and they were inundated with people saying, I went to a medium and you've got to check out this medium, they're fantastic. I couldn't figure out how they were getting this information. Or someone saying, oh, I was at home the other night, I was sat in front of the fire, wasn't particularly thinking anything, I was just doing some knitting and I looked up and there was a man stood in the corner. He was staring at me and he just walked through the room and out through the other wall. And I don't know what that was all about. I've never seen the guy before. These things came in all the time, but now because of popular TV shows and media and a load of interest groups that have built, interest groups in going out and doing ghost hunting and putting this forward as a sort of service that they offer to people, people within those local areas may report their paranormal experiences to them. So we don't hear about it anymore because you get these people that don't really have a background in psychology or physics or counselling or anything like that. And they just go in with their video cameras and videotape it. There's some entertainment factor there, but the person that we really need is the person who reported it in the first place. And it gets lost, whether they have a spontaneous experience with ghosts or whether they go and visit a medium. We want to hear about all these cases, how successful it was. We were only talking to Julie Byshaw, a couple of weeks ago at the University of Northampton. We did a Skype guest lecture with her, and she brought up the interesting thing. We were talking about how therapeutic going to see a medium can be for people, especially when it comes to looking at grief resolution. And she said a study that hasn't been done is looking at instances where people had a bad experience with mediums. We know from quite a famous study in 1971, Dewi Rees published a paper called Hallucinations of Widowhood, and he surveyed about 340 cases of people having spontaneous events during bereavement. And he did note that about 3 to 5% had an experience that they found scary, but he didn't mention it. He didn't go into detail about what was it they found scary, how did it affect them afterwards. And there aren't really any studies going on looking at a group of people where they went to mediums and had a terrible experience as well. This data gets lost. So going back to your original question, is mediumship more prominent now than it was then? I really wouldn't like to say, but it's taken an interesting transition over that time because of all different social factors that have changed at the same time as well. But certainly, whatever we do, whatever things we do to update our lives and how we interact with the world, paranormal experiences still seem to incorporate them in some way and catch up. So I don't think we'll ever be free of this thing called mediumship.
No, and when you mentioned just a minute ago about mediumship readings and people having some fearful experiences, I mean it makes sense. I mean, many people are fearful of anything that defies the known physical senses. So just by the nature of the information they're getting, that's somewhat fearful. The thought also crossed my mind. A lot of people would report an experience is a bad experience with a medium if they were in grief and their loved one didn't come through. To them, that's a bad experience. And it's a horrible experience. And that's one of the problems, I think, with, when we talk about therapy and therapeutic effects of mediumship. I mean, sometimes they can have wonderful positive healing effects on people. On the other hand, it can be detrimental if they're sitting on the edge and not really forming an opinion one way or the other. You know, do we survive, do we not? And then they go to a medium and nothing happens, and they walk away saying, that's a bunch of baloney. That, you know, I don't know why I went in the first place. So, yeah, it's interesting.
It's obviously, it's going to upset them if they're sat there and the medium reels out all these names and the medium insists that they will have a deeper meaning later on or go away and think about it. And yet all these names had nothing to do with either recent bereavement or just a bereavement that's still playing on their mind to that day, and they're hoping that person will come through. But it could go one of two ways. As you say, it could be that they found the experience of going to see a medium scary, or they had a bad experience simply because the medium didn't produce any information that helped. But it's surprising what little information a medium has to come out with in some cases that is enough to satisfy the client that there's a connection with the dead. So I've been to numerous spiritualist churches and sat as an observer, and I'm there thinking in my head, you know, even as a parapsychologist, I could do better than this. I could stand up and do some cold reading of Barnum scripts, and they'll think that I'm the next best thing since, you know, Sally Morgan and Derek Acora.
Right.
And all the medium's doing is saying some very strange things, such as, right, okay, I'm in your kitchen, and am I right in saying that your father, they're already on the topic of their father, let's say, who's passed over, there's a picture of him in the kitchen, am I right? It could be loads of pictures on the fridge, they might be framed, you know, it's an easy stab in the dark, there's going to be pictures in the house. And the person will say, yeah, that's right. And I remember this last one, the medium said, have you just bought a new kettle? And the person went, no. And they went, all right, are you thinking about buying a new kettle? And she went, no, not really. And she went, all right, okay. Something to do with it. Is your kettle, have you had it a while? And they went, yeah, probably about 8 years or so. Okay. It's not coming up to the boil as quick as it used to. And they went, yeah, I suppose so, but that's because it's 8 years old. And the medium then said, yeah, because he's there in the photograph and he's sort of in that vicinity and he's watching you day to day in the kitchen, he's noticed your kettle's sort of getting on the blink. He suggests you get a new one. And you're like, is that really all the person on the other side? If you do survive death, are they really sat in the kitchen just staring at your kettle until it's ready to chuck out and get a new one? I was like, oh, but that was enough for them. They thought, oh my God, you know, maybe I should get a new kettle if Dad says so.
Yeah.
It was surprising. You know, really surprising,
and I think
but
that,
in a way not.
Yeah, you're right, and just my personal opinion based upon what I've observed is that, you know, 85% of the mediums out there, you know, are either vastly inexperienced or can't do what they say they can do. But then you have the 10 or 15% that can give extraordinary evidence, nothing like kettles, you know, and specifics and information that the people didn't know. So it exists. The spirit communication, but unfortunately, like in any other profession or activity, there's good and bad. Unfortunately, we have run out of time. We have been talking with Cal Cooper. If you want to, Cal's into a million different things. We don't have to. We have the time to talk about everything that he's doing, but
we didn't even branch on sexology and the kind of research that I'm doing in that at the moment. So there's so much uncharted territory we're yet to discuss.
Yeah, and if you want to learn more about the teaching and the research and the books, the best way is Twitter, Callum E. Cooper.
Ask him whatever you want.
Look for his various appearances and activities. Cal, thanks so much. As a pleasure as always, we hope you can join us again, and we look forward to seeing you again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me again, Bob and Fran. It's been an absolute pleasure. It's always lovely to talk to you as well. I love you guys. You're absolutely brilliant.
Love you too, and take care, and be well, and keep us posted. Bye now.
I will do indeed. You too, take care. Bye-bye.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind as we visualize the healing light upon Scott Calzia, Donald Peterson, Judy Pernick, Donna Mello, David Mello, Kimberly Saavedra, Rachel Scandarian, Jeanette Davies, Miriam Pierschkoff, Julie Beischel, Ann Hutchinson, David Haith, Rita Springer, Vicky Steffi, Jean Lash, Tracy Lee Nash, Eddie Rolls, Tom Donahue, Tim Donahue, Renata Santarelli, Lynn LeClaire, Joe, Andrea, Richard, Brian, Karen, Henry Stark, Johnny Jackson, Andy O'Brien, Tanya Cash, Stanley Mullen, Glenna Irwin, Lynn Austin, Michael Tim, Patty Potter, Eileen Lafata, Wendy Lippo, Doug Barry, Philip McPhee, and Erica. Now let us as one consciousness give our energy of loving thought by praying like this. To love one another, to treat others as we'd like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time to say...
Our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.